Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
We don't want to waste your time, so we won't. Vuse is vapor done right. Simple, sleek, stylish. Because when you find a vape that goes with everything, everything just clicks. Find Vuse at your local convenience store down the block.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, allegedly. I'm smart.
Happy Monday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie. Happy gay summer, Mel.
Happy hump day, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm not humping anybody. I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Happy Saturday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
Oh, no.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and my mic is muted.
Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and that's Briscoe.
And welcome to Something's Off, a true crime podcast where we swat the haters aside with our astute takes and humor and joy. And
oh, the joylessness I don't of give those a fucking people.
Blah.
Hags.
You hear it first in the break in the story. One little crack and the whole thing gets wary. A witness swears, but the timeline bends. A smile too smooth and the trail just ends. Mel Barrett says, hold up, look again. Rebecca Lavoie follows every thread. If it feels too neat, then it's not the truth. There's a shadow line running through the room. Something's off, something's off. You can feel it in the bones. Something's off, something's off. When the facts won't come home. Something's off, something's off. Who chase?
We're gonna go members only.
Yeah, we're the ones who chase. Wait, did that witness just blink three times? Something's off. Something's off.
Something's off, Rebecca.
It was last time coming this way. Should I move my sign?
You can if you want.
Hold on one second.
It's that bad.
It's not that bad. Okay, I'll just let the...
Is it still yellow?
No, it's beautiful. That's one of the reasons why I have my window here not covered is because it's so nice. Hold on one second, I'm gonna move my sign.
Oh, you're frozen.
I know.
I lost you. Oof.
We're
struggling. I'm struggling. Rebecca has a back issue. Like she hurt her back/ribs while she was sleeping. Because you know. 50s and she's in a lot of pain. I did a 3-hour stream last night on the Pam Smart case and didn't get to bed until very late. And I have tennis after we're done with this. So that's why I look like a bricklayer again. And
I love your bricklayer look personally.
I don't have any makeup on. I'm tired, but I'm here and I'm happy to be here. So we're both just like physically struggling a little bit, but we'll be okay.
We don't have the stamina of the Youngs. Grizz girl, good morning from Montana. I love Montana. I went there a couple years ago in like April of 24, I want to say. And I was only there for a couple days. I had the best time and I would love to go back to Montana. I don't know where you live, but what a beautiful state. I was in the other airport. What's the other one? Not Missoula, the other one. The no fancy idea. Town, the fancy town that's like cosplay Montana. Anyway, that's where I was. It was really, really beautiful.
Is that when you were out there with the girls?
Yeah, I was out there with Katie Brown and Ellen and et cetera. It was absolutely beautiful. I went to Yellowstone for a day. It was one of the best days of my life. It was wonderful. So it was super wonderful.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of things to talk about. Not a lot happened yesterday, but there is a hearing today at 9:45, which we'll be talking about tomorrow on the stream. And just to update everybody, on Monday... I'm going to be traveling to New Hampshire to do the Pam Smart hearing. I'm hoping to be able to stream it. And then Rebecca is going to be going into Boston for the first day of Aiden's trial.
No, it's his motion to dismiss hearing.
His motion to dismiss. Sorry. And so we're planning, we don't have a scheduled morning stream on Monday because we're both going to be in court, but afterward we're going to try to either be in the same room or at least stream on Monday evening about the two cases. So if you were in the live with me last night, you know all about what is being argued on Monday. And it's sort of a big deal and could be like make or break right now for this case. So I hope that you all will tune in. A couple of people were in the chat last night who were actually in New Hampshire, who I think are planning on coming down or coming over or wherever they're going to be to Concord for the hearing for Pam. And I think it's going to be interesting.
Beautiful Concord, New Hampshire, where the courthouse is. It's just going to be in the, which building are you going to be in? The Supreme Court building or the Superior Court?
Merrimack Superior.
Oh, that's a beautiful building. I have done many. That's where I did my jury duties. It's a brand new building. It's quite lovely. Yeah. Not a lot of parking. So I recommend getting there either very early or securing a parking space somewhere else and walking to the downtown toward the courthouse. It's a very, very tight little parking lot because there's a whole other courthouse in the parking lot that shouldn't be there anymore, but there is. It's lovely, 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 lovely building. I'm going to be down in Suffolk County Superior Court. I'm not 100. I guess that's where the judge is on why this Norfolk County case is being heard in Suffolk. But it is, and speaking of parking, that will be a fun early, very early
morning
down to Boston. And I will be paying probably out of the nose, just sitting in some garage. I'm looking forward to it. I'm curious to see who else is going to be there. I'm sure there will be a lot of media there. I've got my credential. I don't plan on streaming it because there will be a pool, as it turns out. The judge ordered yesterday that there will be a pool and it could be streamed. So I will be live tweeting and then reporting back on what I experienced there later. Maybe I'll get some tape on the courthouse steps. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear the arguments in that case. I'm also really interested to hear the arguments in the Pam Smart case, because I feel like even though the state of New Hampshire has been very anti in the past, Matt made such good arguments, constitutional arguments, that you can't really, there's no argument against them. I mean, I'm sure arguments can
be
made.
There will be.
No, but I mean, like, for constitutional if they're basing it in New Hampshire Supreme Court law or decisions, you know, as far as a lawyer telling the jury their client is guilty, I think that's going to be a hard one for them to get past, honestly.
Do you know who's arguing for the state?
I don't. I know the solicitor did the arguments in the briefs, in the responses. So I don't know. I don't know who to expect. Matt was saying something along the lines of like, they basically are just throwing lawyers that aren't. He said they added a lawyer to the team who doesn't seem to know what he's talking about in their responses. So I don't know. It should be interesting. I don't know. I know who the judge is. I know that the judge is conservative. It's Kennedy. Do you know Kennedy? Mm-hmm. I know he's a conservative. But I don't, you know, politics shouldn't play into it. Sometimes it does. So that's all we know so far, but we will see. We're going to be there with a documentary crew as well. Not a big crew, just a couple of people. And they're, because a new documentary is being pitched. So we'll see what happens
To be transparent with folks, I can't really give a take on the Pam Smart case. I can give you my observations about it. I know it's going to be a very hard uphill battle for Hocus Estate, but my outlet's covering it. So I can't give my hard takes on it or anything. I've, as Mel knows, I have complicated feelings about the case. But it's also a huge news story here in New Hampshire, and my work at a news outlet that covers the news here in New Hampshire. So, what's one of the reasons why I won't, like, with Mel's stream last night, I kind of couldn't be on that. Cause it's like, I don't want to in any way give the perception that I have a strong take on. I actually don't have a super strong take on it, but also I don't want in any way taint the reporting that my outlet's doing on it by being too much of a commenter on it.
I think you might either be on your computer audio.
Again?
Different.
Again? Different. I'll fix it. Oh yeah, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
How come it took so long for me to know that? It sucks. Here we go.
It's okay. Kevin was also, he reported on the original trial, didn't he?
What year was the trial?
91.
Yeah, he wouldn't have reported on that.
I thought Kevin was in the courtroom.
No. I mean, he didn't work in, no, he wouldn't have been in the courtroom. He would have been in college.
Oh, then I've been wrong about that for a long time. I always thought Kevin was in the courtroom.
Nope. That was pre-Kevin. Kevin is 56. He's not that old.
Okay. That's right. He would have been. So he's 6 years older than me. I was 15, so he would have been 21. Okay.
Yeah. He was in college.
So a couple of little housekeeping things, not too much, but, you know, become a member.
Yeah.
That's really.
We have great members only content. And the next week or so, we're not only going to be doing our regular chaotic Crossroads stream, but we're also both going to be watching the new Scott Peterson documentary.
Yes.
And I think we might do an Are You Fucking Kidding Me level members only on that. So we can talk about our thoughts on the case after watching the new documentary. As you know, it's long been one of my most controversial true crime takes that I don't necessarily think Scott Peterson did it. The worst case scenario, if he did, I think he got a shit trial, but I do think that he has an excellent chance he did not do it. I've always thought that. I believe Nancy Grace bamboozled America into believing he did, but also, you know, he's a shit husband. So doesn't help when your shit husbandry is on broad display like that. But, anyway, the double dog dare. Oh, I saw that double dog dare guy. I couldn't tell if he was saying, I dare you to think he's guilty after watching the doc, or I dare you to think he's innocent after watching the doc. But I couldn't tell. It was a very weirdly worded tweet. And someone says that he kind of agrees with me. So South Africa, how were you offended when Mel said that she didn't like what's his face's accent yesterday?
No, well, you know what was so funny? I actually love the South African accent. My neighbor in Somerville, my downstairs neighbor, was this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful South African man. And he used to come to my Friendsgiving whenever we would have Thanksgiving for our friends who didn't have anywhere to go. And he would come to Friendsgiving and I could sit and listen to him talk all night. But there's something about Seligson and the way that he delivers his speech. I just don't like it. And then somebody made a comment that was like, yeah, you know, it's difficult to listen to Icelandic people or something. I was like, he's South African. What are
pretty
you
sure
talking
he's
about?
South African. Yeah. Yeah. So South African. The new documentary is on A&E. I just put the link to it in the chat. It's called The New Evidence. And I don't think
out when today.
When they say never before seen new evidence, I'm like, I'm pretty sure we saw the evidence in the briefs that were filed. I don't think there's anything that wasn't actually already filed and that didn't get, that's not getting looked at in court because all those decisions have come out. But,
okay. Yeah. Gerda agrees with me. They don't like the way Seligson speaks either. Someone also said I was racist for saying that. I don't know if that was a joke, but I was like, what are you talking about? Do you understand racism?
Xenophobic, maybe.
Speaking of, I've got
straight toughs.
These guys are going, look at Nicole. Look at Nicole. Nicole's working it. She had a little makeover. I love that everyone, no one recognized her.
Nicole looks younger. Jen definitely looks like she's feeling the passage of time in a way that Nicole is looking really, really good.
I guess if you're Brian.
Maybe she's doing more than just wiping counters these days.
Whoa.
That's just what you hear. You heard that Lenahan talked about a lot about how much she likes to clean.
Swingers. I know.
No.
I'm saying that because I know you hate it so much. I think it's funny. There's a kernel of truth to it. I'm just going to say that. I had one thing I wanted to bring up before. So we're going to talk about two things today. We're going to just briefly go over Grant Smith Ellis's notes from the federal ham defamation case. And he kindly immediately left the courtroom the other day and came out and gave us a really good rundown of what happened inside because it's federal court. There are no cameras in there. So we're going to go over that, but we're also going to go over an order came out yesterday that is causing a stir, an order from Judge Gilday in the wrongful death suit, O'Keefe v. Reed. But before we do that, I wanted to, you and I are debating how, I think what we are debating is Gilday's motivations and how he's acting on the bench. And it's a heated debate between us.
We're debating how to interpret it, not whether or not he's acting weird on the bench. He is acting weird on the bench.
Sure. He's acting weird on the bench. I feel very strongly about it. And I think that the people who were in the stream with me last night talking about Pam's case understand now why I have this immediate distrust of folks on the bench. And it stems from Judge Gray in Pam Smart's case. He was an asshole. I don't believe that I should be speaking kindly of him, even though he is no longer with us. He was an asshole. He made really shitty decisions. He was also the judge who was supposed to rule on his own behavior in her appeal directly after the trial, which I think I always think is fucked up. When the judge who sat the trial, that's why I was like, when Judge M in the Corey Richens case recused himself from making the decision about whether he should stay on, that was the right thing to do. These arguments that we listened to the other day from Alan Jackson and Cosgrove about the appearance of conflict, Judge Gray should have recused himself from Pam Smart's case. So those of you who listened last night, you understand maybe why I feel the way that I do about judges. And then I basically want them to prove to me that they're not assholes. Like, I like Doolin so far.
To you? Prove to you personally that they're not assholes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. That is exactly right. I want them to prove that they are not assholes.
To you.
It's my opinion. Maybe.
I love you so much. I love your crusading heart so much.
We got tagged in a tweet yesterday. Let me put this up on the screen. I guess you can't see it very well. We got tagged in this tweet from Judge Erskine, who Carol Erskine, who is, as I understand it, a retired judge in the state of Massachusetts. She worked in the family court. So she was heavily involved in the Kelsey Fitzsimmons like commentary. She was also the judge who was responsible for overseeing the adoption of Harmony's brother. I can't think of Harmony's last name.
Montgomery.
Montgomery. Thank you. Harmony Montgomery was the little girl who was brutally slain by her own father, as far as we understand it, because he has been found guilty of that. He may get a new trial because the state of New Hampshire fucked it up. They are wont to do. And so Harmony's little brother was adopted out to another family, and Judge Erskine oversaw that case. And they were trying to also adopt Harmony to this couple, but there were some issues with that, so it didn't happen. So Judge Erskine is, I think, a well-known and respected judge in Massachusetts. And this is what she had to say about Judge Gilday and his comments about entitlement or arrogance. I'm just going to read it really quickly. I have nothing to say about the merits of the motions filed by either side. I do not follow these cases closely. Anti-SLAPP litigation is not my area of expertise, and I am not taking sides in this dispute. What does concern me is the troubling language used by Judge Gilday. Throughout my years on the bench, it was made clear that judges should focus on the legal sufficiency of a filing, not characterize the attorney who filed it. Appellate courts have repeatedly cautioned trial judges against abandoning clinical, objective language in favor of inflammatory commentary. The issue is not whether a motion was deficient. Judges have every right and obligation to say so. The concern arises when criticism shifts from the filing itself to language suggesting an attorney acted out of arrogance or a sense of entitlement. As the United States Supreme Court noted in Litke versus the United States, judicial comments can raise concerns when they reflect a degree of personal antagonism that causes the public to question whether impartial judgment remains possible. There is a line that cannot be crossed. For 20 years, I lived under the Massachusetts Code of Judicial Conduct. Rule 1.2 requires judges to act at all times in a manner that promotes public confidence in the independence, integrity, and impartiality of the judiciary. That obligation extends beyond actual impartiality. It includes avoiding the appearance of partiality. Thoughts, Rebecca?
Sorry, my dog was barking. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that she's smart. I think that she is, you know, a good person to listen to on stuff like this. I mean, my mind isn't changed that what he's doing is something I've seen a gajillion times and I have a higher tolerance for it. But yeah, I mean, it's not great.
It's wrong. Do you think it's
sure,
wrong?
Sure, of course I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong, but I also don't think it's, I've seen it before. My whole point isn't that you're wrong to say it's wrong. My whole point is that I don't expect judges to behave the way I personally want them to behave. And they never do, hardly ever do, except for the guy in the Corey Richens case. And and I think it's great when they're normal and kind and behave with a tremendous high level of ethics and run their courtroom the way I would run it. But I am not the same as other people in the world, and I don't expect judges to all align with my values of how I would run the courtroom. And so I have a higher tolerance for it. I've just been watching it a really, really long time. But she's not wrong. She's absolutely right. And so are you. You're both right. I'm not going to get as fired up about it, I guess, is what my point is. And I didn't get as fired up about Canone as other people did either. So this should not come as a surprise to anyone.
Well, you had a friend who personally knows Canone. So there was some backstory to that.
I knew two people, but like, I honestly think that I don't think she was great. I think she did made a huge number of mistakes. I think she's lucky that Karen got acquitted, because I think there would have been a lot of appealable issues. But I also don't think what she did was like a lot different than what I've seen other judges do in lots of other cases. I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. I think that her bias was very clear. But bias is not uncommon, unfortunately.
Do you think Gilday should recuse himself from anything to do with Turtle Boy?
I do. I said that a couple weeks ago. I think that bringing Turtle Boy into talking about Turtle Boy's social media posts in the civil matter means that he should not be involved in the defamation matter, in which Turtle Boy's posts and his relationship with Reed's team is the heart of their complaint. And he talked about a lack of trust in leaks. He talks about it in his order today that we're about to talk about today. I don't think he should be overseeing that case. I think that would be a very normal thing for him to be taken off that case, but it probably won't happen.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about this federal. So there is a federal suit.
Wait, can I address this comment? Yes, I think absolutely. High tolerance is understandable, but maybe we shouldn't be so tolerant of bad behavior from judges who wield so much power. My tolerance is high in terms of how I feel about it. My tolerance isn't high in terms of whether or not I think it's right or wrong. I don't think it's right. I'm not in a position to, unfortunately, remove a judge from the bench. If I did, I probably would do that. But I think that, like, when I look at all these cases, I look at the stakes in the cases. Canone's behavior was more important because that was a murder case. It's a civil case. Civil cases are important, but they're not as important as murder cases. This judge is very annoyed. He also, I think, believes that his civil case is being treated as if it's a high stakes murder case. And I think that really annoys him, among other things that annoy him. I am not saying I don't think it's wrong. I'm not saying that I think Mel is wrong for thinking it's wrong. I'm saying it's also wrong. I'm just saying I'm not going to spend as much energy getting fired up about it as others will, because I just have seen it so much. And I'm not surprised. I guess I'm less surprised. That's all.
I guess the question is then, what do we do about it?
We keep doing what we're doing. Keep talking about it.
When we see it. Right.
We don't have any power. We're not voters in Massachusetts.
Right.
I mean,
I guess just keep talking.
I have power in New Hampshire to vote for a different governor. But I don't, you know, that's who appoints judges in New Hampshire, and executive counselors do confirmations and all that stuff. And the Senate, my state senators, my legislators do confirmations. Like I have that power. I don't have power in Massachusetts except to talk about it and hopefully bring more public attention to it. And that's kind of the role of the media generally. So has Rebecca become jaded? Yes, of course I've become jaded. I'm incredibly jaded. I've been reporting on true crime since 2007.
Yeah.
I'm very jaded. The answer is yes, but that's not new. I'm not newly jaded as of 2 weeks ago. I came to you guys that way. Sorry.
Yeah, that's true. She did. She came here that way. Okay, let's talk about the federal case for a moment. Obviously, no cameras in the courtroom. Grant Smith Ellis was able to get inside. Obviously, he couldn't record anything or stream anything. So he took a lot of handwritten notes. Which is why in his retelling of what happened, he always calls Tuxby, because I think that's his shorthand.
Oh, I see.
He probably wrote Tux and the letter B. And so when he's reading, when he was saying it, and, you know, his brain is very fast. So I think when he was saying it, he kept saying Tuxby, and I thought that was funny.
He
is an interesting guy. He's got a lot of drama going on in his life. He always has. But he's like, he's doing some good reporting here, I have to say. He's doing some good work, and I appreciate it. So who was there? This is the Ham defendants, so the Higgins, Albert, McCabe defendants. And who showed up? You just saw the picture. Brian Albert, Jen McCabe, Chris Albert, we think Nicole Albert, and Matt McCabe. Also, Yuri Buchanek was there. And there was no Karen Reed, no Tully, no Proctor, even though what we were mostly talking about was Tully in this situation. So Tully's attorney got up and had some arguments. he argued that the grand jury original, the original probable cause grand jury findings protects him from malicious prosecution. Tully was completely unaware of alleged prosecutorial misconduct or investigation abuses. I call bullshit on that. He was unaware of them until February of 2024. I thought that date was interesting. So what happened in February of 2024?
February 2024 was when the people started testifying in front of the grand jury. And that's when Michael Proctor told Tully what he had said in front of the grand jury and that his texts were going to come out.
Right.
Remember the trip they took to his house to make sure he was okay?
He wasn't thinking about unaliving himself. That's why I thought February 2024 was really interesting, because that's when he got the inside scoop on what was happening with Michael Proctor and his texts. The judge was asking questions about supervisor liability, why allegations of investigation bias did not meet the standard required to move the case forward. And Tully's attorney argued that his actions were discretionary shielded under Mass Tort Claims Act. I don't know anything about the Mass Tort Claims Act. I'm not an attorney, but that's something that I would like to look up and understand a little bit better. But the judge questioned whether that specific standard even applies to intentional non-negligence tort claims. Karen Reed's attorney got up and said that Tully knowingly stood by and did nothing while Michael Proctor failed to properly investigate the ham defendants.
Michael Proctor is also a party in this case. He's also, in his personal capacity, a party in this case.
Yes, he is.
So he wasn't there, obviously.
Yeah, Buchanek, Tully, Proctor are all a part of this. Mm-hmm. He was not there, no, because I think he's probably in a mental health facility.
Don't say that. That's sharing confidential information.
But the judge told me it's true.
Oh, yes. But even you saying it, even though he said it was true, could be construed and fire up his concerns about information leaking from discovery.
Should I get a lawyer? Like,
Maybe we should.
I'll call Matt. All
can
right.
Can we get that lawyer that Plevin pretends to be on the internet?
The anonymous lawyer.
Mass Anon lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, him. Let's see. The ham defendants got up and argued as well. And Tuxbury called the ham defendants citizen defendants who were merely witnesses, and argued anti-SLAPP applies in federal court, which I find hilarious. The judge's questions to Tuxbury focus heavily on petitioning activity as it applies to the House defendants or the ham defendants. And the judge questioned whether a private citizen can legally be deemed to have initiated a prosecution or arrest simply by cooperating and discussing the case with law enforcement.
That's actually a very, very good legal question.
Great question. Because what we all know, based on the FOIA and Find Out docs and all of these the documents that Kyle Sharkey and Emily C. and Corey have gotten, there were many, many, many letters, correspondence, emails, meetings between the McCabes, the Higgins, the Alberts about, why aren't you doing something about these guys, basically? Like, do something. So I find it interesting. It's an interesting question. So we don't really know what's going to happen. The judge hasn't made any kind of order, but Grant was positing that if the judge rules that the ham behavior crosses into joint state action, Ham is going to have a very high burden in this case. And then we got a little snippet from Yuri Buchanek's, in my opinion, hack attorney, who came outside and was a douchebag, basically, to the media that was there. But he was on camera saying that he doesn't expect the case to be fully dismissed at this stage.
And Yuri Buchanek's lawyer said that?
Was it Yuri Buchanek's lawyer or Tully's lawyer? It was one of those guys. I think it was Yuri's lawyer, actually.
So one of the cops' lawyers said that they don't expect the case to be dismissed. Good.
Yes.
I don't know.
And that they never did anything wrong. The investigation was great.
Well, you know, the investigation was great. It was unimpeachable. I mean, totally. Listen, Michael Proctor may have had a couple of inappropriate texts here and there, but it was an unimpeachable investigation. And for
regrettable
texts. This is the Anon Mass lawyer account. that is definitely Lenahan. And it's very fun. It's very fun too, because the language, like the writing, is exactly the same as Lenahan's. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good. So if you ever want to see Kevin Lenahan pretending to be a lawyer, go ahead and
there you have it.
Allegedly, go ahead and follow the anonymous lawyer.
All right, let's look at these orders that have come out from Judge Gilday. So I want to go back to the original order. Let me make this bigger. I want to go back to the original order because this was him. Do you remember when he was like, okay, you guys got to get together and you got to come up with, you got to figure out how to handle discovery in this case and what people know and what they don't know and all this stuff.
You got to agree. You got to agree on a process.
You got to agree. And if you don't agree, then I'm going to step in and I'm going to make an order. So this is Gilday's order. Let me see. Let me pull it, make sure I have the right one up there. Yeah, this is O'Keefe versus everybody. This is a notice regarding parties conference. I appreciate counsel seeking to keep me informed, but a notice regarding parties conference is not an appropriate pleading to be filed. There he is again, schooling them on procedure.
He's the Sue O'Connell of judges.
Yes. The Superior Court rules include limited opportunity for the filing of notice type pleadings. Okay. The parties should refrain from filing such notice type pleadings unless they are required under applicable rules or are requested by me. On July 1, 2026, I did encourage the attorneys to confer and to seek to reach an agreement. And I further stated that in absence of an agreement, I will consider whether to enter an order based on my plenary authority to control, manage, and oversee the conduct of discovery. In my July 6, 2026 order, paper number 152, I stated if no such agreement was filed by 4:30 p.m. on July 9th, I would issue further orders I deemed appropriate. I did not request to be notified as to the progress of the discussions between counsel. I also questioned seeking to put the emails relative to communications from various counsel on such issue on the docket. He doesn't want us to read those emails. Also, I find it funny that he's like, and don't at me, okay? Don't at me in all your conversations back and forth. I don't give a fuck. Just get back to the court with your final decision. And if you can't get it right, I'm going to come in. Daddy's going to step in.
I'm going to Kool-Aid man it.
I'm going to snap into a Slim Jim.
He's going to tell you to snap into a Slim Jim.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
And then guess what happened? The attorneys couldn't agree. And guess what Daddy did?
Wait, hold on. I did want to bring this up because there were two responses. Well, there were four responses because Karen Reed's team responded to that order. The Haas defendants responded to the order, and both restaurants responded to the order. This is Karen Reed's response.
So this is in Reed versus O'Keefe versus Reed. Just keep that in mind. Right.
The wrongful death suit.
This is the one that matters the most in my very, very strenuous opinion.
So
this is the one that if Karen Reed loses, she will have been found guilty of John O'Keefe's death in a court of law, and that will be used against her for the rest of her life.
Yes. Defendant Karen Reed respectfully responds to the court's July 10 order seeking feedback on proposed language restricting use of deposition testimony. Reed believes that the court's proposed language is overly and unnecessarily broad and would significantly prejudice her. In particular, the court's proposed language would limit the use of all, quote, deposition testimony taken in this matter, end quote, to this case and the McCabe's case. That means that such testimony could be used by all non-Reed party plaintiffs in the two cases against her where they have the burden of proof, but not in the two cases in which Reed is a plaintiff and has the burden of proof pending in Superior Court and federal court after removal by defendants. I find that to be pretty heavy. Do you have thoughts about what I just read?
Yeah, I mean, they're right. I mean, the issue is that what she's saying is they can use it and we can't. And there's like some nuance here, because if you give sworn deposition, it's like testifying in front of a jury. I mean, it's testimony, right? But it's testimony on camera with a bunch of lawyers and a transcriptionist and so forth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you should be able to refer, say I sue a tobacco company because I tripped and fell in their parking lot and
cigarette?
I broke my leg. No, let's just say, I sue them for something unrelated to cigarettes, but let's just say I sue them because one of their cigarette trucks hit my car or something, right? Mm-hmm. If, you know, somebody testifies in my case or submits an affidavit in my case, and I find a deposition that they gave in a cigarette-related case 6 years ago that contradicts the thing they say in my case, hey, our trucks have 10 wheels. No, our trucks only have 8 wheels, something like that. I'm being really granular here. I could bring that up and say, isn't this different than what you said in sworn testimony on this date? And that's yes. One of the reasons why these depositions are so important, because there are so many cases going on that they're also, by the way, incredibly expensive to do. So you could, it benefits all these people to not have to do this multiple times. And that's kind of what they're being set up to have to do. That being said, doing them multiple times isn't necessarily bad because you might not be able to use the material deposition, but you may be able to ask the question, is this or is this not different than something that you said on this date? So it's complicated, but I don't disagree with their take here.
Okay, so going on, no rule restricts use of deposition testimony in this manner. And in fact, the standard evidentiary guidelines permit use of prior deposition testimony in later proceedings as prior sworn statements. Of course, the court has discretion to restrict use of specific confidential information where necessary, but the court's proposed language would mean that any admissions or testimony obtained in this case could be contradicted in either of the other pending claims in which Reed asserts claims. There is no justification for such a restriction. Reed has repeatedly submitted uncontroverted evidence that there was no violation of the court's impoundment order, which is the stated reason for this proposed restriction. And what they're talking about here is their response to the arguments that Judge Gilday got it wrong about the Proctor's medical information being leaked to the Twitterverse. He got it wrong, and they put it in writing and said, here are all the facts of why you got it wrong. And he was like, okay, so I got the time mixed up. But also something happened on the 25th of June. Like, that was his response to them. I missed my spot. However, regardless, Reed has proposed to the parties that all deposition testimony and all personal medical information be used only for the four cases pending regarding these events and not otherwise disseminated. So they're saying it should be allowed to be used in all four of the civil cases. That shouldn't be a problem here. The plaintiffs have not agreed to this restriction, but Reed remains willing to accept the restriction. If the court were to order such a restriction, Reed also requests the court state that any party accused of a violation of the court's order will be provided with notice of such accusation and the opportunity to be heard before any sanctions are imposed.
That makes sense.
They're basically like, the next time you think that everybody fucked up, how about you let us make some arguments and show you some evidence that we didn't fuck up before you blame us for something we didn't do?
Right. How about you don't blame us for somebody who works at the building, the State Street building, whatever it is, where that law firm is, that somebody who works at the hot dog cart or something who sent a video. How about you send us that so we can prove to you that it wasn't us and that it could have been the hot dog cart guy. By the way, I'm making up hot dog cart guy, but it is pretty clear that somebody who is in the vicinity of that building who likely works there because they've sent Turtle Boy multiple tips about the comings and goings of people. My other thought is maybe don't do your depositions at that law office because clearly you guys have a leak in the building. It's not your leak. It's a building leak, but still.
It's a building leak. You got a building leak over there, you guys. All right. The next one we're going to go over briefly is the Haas defendant's response or their response to Judge Gilday's order.
Wait, no, this is their plaintiffs, not the Haas defendants. This is Paul O'Keefe. This is the O'Keefes.
Oh, sorry. You're right. The O'Keefes. Plaintiffs appreciate and support the court's interest in protecting the confidentiality of private, personal, and medical information obtained during discovery in order to effectuate the court's intent to strike the appropriate balance between protecting the privacy rights of parties and witnesses on the one hand and to not impede the plaintiff's ability to fully develop and discover evidence on the other. Plaintiffs respectfully request clarification as to the scope of the proposed order. So this is not them responding. They just want Gilday to give them more information so they understand what he's asking for. So the proposed order prohibits dissemination of the entirety of every deposition without exception. Plaintiffs are concerned about three potential implications. Plaintiffs intend to use Ms. Reed's deposition testimony and that of other witnesses in future depositions for the purpose of establishing credibility issues. So they want to impeach other Karen and other witnesses based on what they say in their depositions. Plaintiffs believe the court the court's order should not limit a party's ability to use deposition testimony while deposing other witnesses. Not every potential witness in this case will be deposed, and plaintiffs similarly will need to ask witnesses about statements made by Karen and other witnesses in deposition. The court's order should not hamper plaintiff's ability to investigate the veracity of Karen's sworn testimony outside of the deposition context. Finally, the language could be construed to prohibit the filing of evidence in motions before this court. Plaintiffs seek clarification on how the court would like the parties to handle public filings, specifically whether the court requires the parties to file under seal all deposition transcripts and all medical information, including information about Ms. Reed's medical condition, central to the intoxication issues in the case, used in the prior criminal trials, argued by Ms. Reed's criminal defense team, and disclosed publicly to the media by Ms. Reed and or her criminal defense team. So there it is. We finally, you know, like we all knew what was going on, that they wanted her medical records because they want to try to figure out if she's taking drugs that could interfere with drinking and that, you know, maybe cause this wrongful death. So they've said it finally. Do you have any thoughts about their arguments? I think that's reasonable.
It's super reasonable. They're basically saying, yeah, dude, you're being opaque. We won't know if we're violating. And he's done this before. I mean, I just want to say thank you, Dr. Macy, for the $1.99. Thanks for reading my book, Our Little Secret. He is being so, he, in the order that he put out the other day, not the one we're going to be talking about, he was like, I didn't tell you had to stop the depositions. I just stayed discovery.
Right.
I mean, he's doing that thing where it's like, I didn't say that COVID was fake. I just asked, why is everybody wearing masks? No one seems sick to me. Mm-hmm. Like he's doing that word. Yeah. So I think them asking for clarity, I'm actually, can I be honest, kind of relieved. Like, I think it's telling that they seem to be looking at this medical stuff. It's acknowledging is that the other evidence doesn't bear it out. So we have to find some other thing that a jury could see as a reason that maybe no one's talked about before that's new to us. But to me, it's telling, and it gives me hope that the case really isn't going anywhere on their side. So
they don't have anything. I think what they're banking on is trying to come up with some evidence that she actually did this. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any evidence because we went through two trials and there was no evidence that Karen Reed hit John with her SUV, nor is there any evidence that John was hit by a car. So, okay. So this is the final order that after those arguments, I'm not going to go through the restaurant arguments. I'm mostly focused on these arguments. And this was the final order that came out yesterday from Judge Gilday. And there's a lot of commentary outside of this that we can talk about. Because this is very interesting to me.
This is a very good comment. This wrongful death case is a car accident case. It's on the plaintiffs to prove a crash occurred. That is absolutely correct.
Abso-fucking-lutely. So this is from Judge Gilday. This is his order. This order is issued based on my plenary authority to control, manage, and oversee the conduct of discovery. Buster v. George W. Moore, Inc., 438 Mass., blah, blah, blah. In general, discovery matters are committed to the sound discretion of the trial judge. He's already cited this before, so... Cronin and Strayer, we remind judges that the scope and timing of discovery is within their discretion and the prevention of discovery abuse is sufficient justification for the authorization of protective orders. With this authority at hand, judges should not hesitate to exercise appropriate control over the discovery process, end quote. This matter was specially assigned to me on November 14th, 2025. In the 8 months since then, I have been presented with various motions to compel, motions for a protective order, and motions to quash. Such motions have raised issues as to confidentiality of medical records, confidentiality of personnel and disciplinary records, and possible public dissemination and/or posting to social media of deposition materials and other privacy-related issues. Now, there's a footnote that says the partial listing of such motions is attached here too as Exhibit A. Many of the motions involved depositions of non-parties. I read the language of 45B as to quote unquote undue burden to include a non-party's right to privacy in certain matters. on June 29th, 2026, having been advised of information that allowed for a reasonable inference of a violation of an order of impoundment issued by me, I issued an order, paper number 139, in my July 10th, 2026 endorsement on a motion for reconsideration, paper number 156.
Hit pause.
I acknowledge.
Yes. Hit pause. I'm sorry. I thought you were done with the sentence. The reasonable inference language is his way of saying, I may have been wrong, but it was okay that I was wrong. A normal person would have thought the same thing. That's what reasonable inference means.
It's okay that I asked you all to fly into Massachusetts and cram into this courtroom so that you could be chastised for me for 10 to 15 minutes because I thought I was right and I had good information. Turns out, I didn't.
But I won't say, I won't just say that. Christy Major, thank you for telling me you broke a rib while sleeping. I feel better. When I first went to the doctor, it was to see if I had a broken rib because I was like in so much pain. I, for those who don't know, I have an intercostal tear or strain from sleeping. I got it while sleeping. I either tore or strained the muscle between my ribs.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. I'm not laughing at you, but I understand.
You can laugh at me. I had to tell, I was in my senior team Slack yesterday and I was like, here's why I'm going to be on and off my computer, blah, 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 yada, yada. And my boss was like, oh man, back pain, no joke. And I'm like, yeah, but I can't even pretend it was a cool sports situation or something. I can't even say it was the gym or when I was lifting a box. I was literally sleeping. And now I have to sleep on my back with a pillow under my knees and my headrest propped up like I'm in a goddamn hospital. And I'm taking liquid capsule Advil, like two of them every 2 hours. It's ridiculous. So I'm sorry that you broke a rib while sleeping, but it makes me feel a little bit better.
Oh, it's tough.
I'm going to start stretching before bed.
I do. I actually do stretch before bed because I'm sick of groaning. I'm sick of groaning every time I stand up.
I'm going to start doing my yoga stretches before bed.
When I'm sitting on the floor somewhere, like sometimes when I'm in the living room, I don't like to sit on the couch because I just feel like, I don't know.
Tell the truth, Rebecca. Were you Brian and Nicole sleeping?
Who posted something? Kyle Sharkey, was it? Posted a joke about Kevin and you, about your back. And I was like, That's pretty funny, Kyle. Let me see if I can find it.
I love Kyle.
No. It was really funny to me. Let me see if I can find it real quick. We have a lot of notifications going on right now.
We do?
Yeah. I mean, through Twitter. I don't think I can find it. It happened yesterday, and we've had hundreds and hundreds of notifications.
Oh, while we're here, I just want to share one piece of information. KY Maverick, the gentleman who I follow on Twitter, who's getting a lung transplant, his Twitter was hacked and he has a new Twitter account. I'm posting it here. Please follow him there if you followed him before. And his Twitter was inexorably hacked, as it turns out. So.
Also, we really appreciate it when you post pictures of either you in your merch or getting your merch. Holly on Twitter said they got their hoodie today. I'll save you the Kevin from South Boston pic, but oh my God, I'm in love. I'm sad there's no front pocket, but if it's amazing. And my kids said, ooh, what did you get? They say Boston and said, oh my God, Mom, it's another Karen Reed shirt.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Okay. My son thought I borrowed one of Kevin's sweatshirts and I had to explain. And when I started explaining it to him, I realized how stupid the whole thing was, how much I know about this. I'm like, well, there was a guy who was inside the house. He's also a federal agent and he fake called into a radio show. And then I played the thing and he was like, and people buying this sweatshirt? I'm like, they are. Because it's genius.
It's funny. I was realizing last night, like how much information I have in my head about the pandemic. I told the entire story with detail about evidence and testimony, people changing their name. I did all of that with no notes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually, I referenced my notes like once just to make sure I had the timeline right. But I went on for 3 hours talking about this case and realizing that I didn't really need notes to do that. I'm an encyclopedia.
Melissa pulled a muscle around her ribs, opening up a drawer.
Okay. Well,
I feel so much better. I feel so much better.
Okay. Let's get back to this because I do have a heart out today. We have to leave in like 20 minutes.
Let's go.
Okay.
Let's fucking go.
This is back to Gilday's order, his final order. In my July 10th, 2026 endorsement on a motion for reconsideration, paper number 156, I acknowledge subsequent information as to the time of June 8th, 2026 post on X alone did not allay my concerns that gave rise to the order, especially given the content of a June 25th. Is he not reading it himself? Does he not realize that June 25th is well before June 6th and that there was no order on June 25th? So who gives a fuck? Like, it doesn't matter what anyone posted on June 25th.
I can tell you what I think he's thinking. Okay. It still doesn't make it right.
Translate.
I think he's thinking this whole story has so many leaks and I don't want to add to that pile. So clearly somebody is leaking from over here to something that has nothing to do with this case. And clearly somebody's leaking something to Turtle Boy over here that has nothing to do with this case. And I don't want to add more to that potential leaking material, which is really fucking stupid. That's what I think he's trying to say. And it's really stupid. It has nothing to do with anything. It's extra judicial. It's extra everything. And non-conversational. You do not have to apologize about your hot dog cart comment because I do, in fact, love hot dogs.
She does. She loves hot dogs. I had invited counsel to come to an agreement to hold private personal information in confidence, but have been informed that though the parties sought to agree on restrictions on dissemination, they have been unable to reach a unanimous mutual agreement prior to issuing the below order. I invited the parties to provide comments on proposed draft language, and I did receive and have considered certain comments. Based on the above, the following discovery order shall apply in this matter. So here's the actual order. Quote, deposition testimony taken in this matter in the form of video or audio recordings or written transcripts, including private personal medical information learned at any such deposition or through discovery, shall only be used for purposes of this case or McCabe v. Reed et al. So any deposition that happens on this case can only be used for this case or the defamation case that the Ham defendants are bringing against Reed. This order is not intended to restrict the standard evidentiary guidelines permitting the use of prior deposition testimony in other proceedings as prior sworn statements. The use of prior depositions in other depositions in these matters or the investigation of the veracity of any sworn testimony. Parties shall adhere to trial court rule 8 relative to the inclusion of protected information in any filings, including any motions for relief from this order. Notice of any claim of violation of this discovery order will issue and an opportunity to be heard provided before the imposition of sanctions. And then Exhibit A. I don't even understand what Exhibit A is, really. That was footnote 4.
He's basically saying these are the things that happened that I had concern, the motions that I've had to put out as it relates to this topic. Now, this is a very interesting ruling.
Poor judge had to do some work.
It does cover what I said earlier, where he says, so basically what he's saying is, I am limiting the use of this actual testimony to things that are in trials under my control. But I'm not saying you can't use it in a different matter as referring to past sworn testimony. So what is he saying? Because that's exactly how it would be used. I guess what he's saying is you can't ask questions of these people that relate to a different matter that's not under my two things or use answers to questions that could relate to a different matter. But he's not limiting them from using them the way they would be used in other proceedings anyway. So I just don't understand what this order says, what it does. I've heard some people say it's illegal because you have to be able. But he's also saying, I'm not limiting this. This is incredibly confusing. If I received this as a lawyer, I'd be like, wow. What now? What? Clarify? What? So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the people that are saying that it's illegal are basically I always think back about the depositions that they did with Donald Trump in the E. Jean Carroll case. Those are all public. Like, we all know what happened in those depositions. If they do depositions in this case and I submit a FOIA request or a right to know request, am I going to be denied because of this order?
I don't know. I don't know.
Right. That's my point. Like, we have the right to know.
It's so unclear. I mean, when I first read it, at first reading, I was like, this doesn't seem unreasonable because he's not limiting their use outside of the court. And then I read it again and I'm like,
yeah,
but he is limiting their use outside of these two cases.
He is. He's also limiting it to just McCabe. He's just limiting it to this case, the wrongful death suit, and the one that McCabe filed against Karen for defamation. So she's not allowed to use it.
Which he's also overseeing.
She's not allowed to use it in the cases where she's suing. That doesn't make any sense.
Because those are not in his courtrooms, though. And that's his issue.
I get it.
Right. No, I know.
She is paying for the deposition with Michael Proctor. Basically the part that I'm having an issue with is that he is a judge on these two cases. He is telling another judge, I don't care what you say in my courtroom, they're not allowed to use these depositions in your case. What?
Right. Right. And Liz Miz, I believe you're right. He's basically saying you can't bring them in as primary sources in those other cases, but they can be impeachment material. That's how I am interpreting this. That's how I interpreted it, as Higgins
would say. He doesn't get to tell the other judge what to do in his own courtroom. I mean, I don't know. I'm just like, what?
That's the way I interpreted it.
What the fuck?
Yeah. You know what he's not?
He's a precious boy.
Not a precious boy.
Oh, I'm so frustrated with this guy. I don't know what to expect next. And today at 9:45, the hearing that's supposed to happen. Let me just grab Kyle's tweet.
Good old Kyle. Kyle's a primary source for this podcast.
We love Kyle.
Kyle is like our Encyclopedia Britannica.
Kyle, not Turtle Boy. I'll pull up Kyle's tweet so you guys can see it. Hold on. Despite the look on my face, thanks for the very kind comment. The Pam Smart Show last night was great, Mel. I would have never known it was 3 hours. I was so invested. But Rebecca, do you know what happened to me last night?
What happened to you?
In the stream, I was caught off guard and I cried.
Oh,
and I was shocked by it. It didn't. I felt so. It hit me so hard in the moment, and I was like, "Oh my god, I just got emotional. Oh my god, I'm crying."
You spent a lot of time and a lot of your heart on this. That's why.
Yeah, and the one thing I was thinking toward the end of the stream when we were, because I basically broke down the whole story up until we get to the habeas, and one of the points in the habeas petition is that we are saying that. And I say we because I did the investigation and research and worked with the lawyers on this. That's why I'm saying we. I'm not trying to like say I represent Pam in any way, but I did this investigation and some of the points that are in the habeas come from my investigation. One of the things that I discovered in going through the statutes it is pretty complicated because at the end of the day, Billy Flynn ended up being charged and convicted of second degree, not first degree. Pam is charged with accomplice to first degree. And the statute says that they have to sort of be on, I did ugly cry. The statute says that they have to be sort of on the same level as the accomplice has to be of the same mindset, basically. And in, you know, like the planning and stuff like that for first degree. But Billy Flynn who is the trigger man and went to prison for it, pled out and got second degree. So she was convicted of a crime that the court is saying kind of doesn't exist. She could have
that been, happened to Jason Carroll too. Jason Carroll was convicted of conspiring with people to murder someone, and neither one of them, one of them was found not guilty, and the other one, his case was dismissed. Yeah.
So what are we doing? But the bigger issue there is that Judge Gray, in his sentencing of Pamela Smart, said that he was mandated to sentence her to life without parole for the crime of accomplice to first degree. The crime was wrong. And he is not mandated. And so I think what got me was when I was talking about, first of all, Pam's dad died several months ago, and she was not granted a video conference with him to say goodbye, which I think is inhumane. And I was explaining to the audience that her main focus is to get out of prison so that she can go take care of her mom, who is now elderly and without her husband and is suffering from early onset dementia. And then I just basically put it to the audience that if 35 years ago, a judge told you that he was mandated to sentence you to life without parole, and every lawyer you've ever had and you and everyone you know just accepted that because a judge said it to you and because a judge used the word mandated. And you find out 35 years later that he was never mandated and that you got the wrong sentence for the crimes that he said you committed. And your father is now dead. Your mother is aging. And you've been sitting in prison for 35 years and you don't have any possibility of parole. How would you feel? Even if you'd done the stupidest shit that she did, even if you'd committed crimes, even if, let's go all the way up to unaliving somebody. If the punishment for that crime should have been 25 to life with the possibility of parole, and you were told by a judge that he was mandated to give you life without parole, and 35 years later you found out that that wasn't the case at all, how would you feel? And what would you want the system to do to rectify that? And I think when I said that aloud, it really hit me finally. And I was like, that's exactly it for me, you know? Mm-hmm. And it made me emotional and I felt stupid and I wasn't expecting to be emotional. I don't usually get that way when I'm talking about this case. I'm pretty like fired up and talking about it. And then it finally hit me last night. So this is pretty momentous what's happening on Monday. And if it's allowed to move forward, there's going to be an evidentiary hearing. And I hope that's where we're moving toward.
But it's interesting because as much as I have my doubts that the court will do anything with this case ever. And then like in the long and endless future of the criminal legal system in New Hampshire, I've also been surprised by a couple of rulings they've made lately. So we'll see. We'll see.
TC Nerd, I know that you're trying to be contrary here. No, Pamela Smart is not an only child. And in fact, her sister has picked up her life and moved to Florida to take care of her mom. And her brother is in California on the other side of the country. And the three of them are trying to figure out how to help her mom. Obviously, there are complicated family issues about who is the right person to take care of mom and all that stuff, which, you know, we all understand. But no, she is not an only child. Yeah, Pam was 22. Even if you think Pam Smart did it, which I never believe she did, that is cruel not to allow her to say goodbye to her parents. Okay, I'm not going to talk about this anymore because I know Rebecca can't talk about it. Okay, do we have anything else that we need to go through? We're going to watch this trial. Oh, that's what I was going to talk about. We're going to watch this hearing a little bit later today. This is kind of a big deal, actually, because what we're going over, there's a Kyle Sharkey posted the info, the O'Keefe v. Reed hearing.
Yet another one.
9:45 status hearing. Call-in update. Yuri Bukenik deposition tomorrow. Massachusetts State Police turnover emails privilege log due yesterday. Updates on other depots and discovery. So there's a lot that's going to happen, hopefully, today. Hopefully, we get through a lot of information and we have a little bit more info going forward about what's happening with Gilday.
We'll see. I'm curious to see who shows up. I'm sure it'll be Rosenberg, because Rosenberg is the one who's been prepping and arguing for this case. But
I mean, Seligson needs to maybe take a break and like figure some shit out.
Well, he seems to be working on the defamation matter more, but
he shouldn't be
for that one either. I know.
No, he shouldn't be.
I need a First Amendment attorney.
I know. Pyle was so amazing. Oh, it was so amazing. Anything else you want to add before we head out of here?
No, I just want to say thanks to the folks who've reached out and said that they hope my back feels better. I hope so too. And it's been really lovely seeing you all every morning. And, you know, Mel and I are going to be taking a look at our future schedule in the coming month or two. August, mm-hmm. I have a lot of time off because I'm going on vacation for a week and then my son is getting married. And I anticipate that after that, we're going to be trying some new things. So maybe you'll see us more often in the early mornings. Maybe.
Absolutely. And feel free to send us a tip if you feel like it, if you like the content. Also, you know, we're traveling to court on Monday and that's helpful to get coffee and shit like that. Thanks for the tips that were sent in last night for my trip to New Hampshire, driving up on Saturday.
Yeah, no one's reimbursing our mileage or travel for these trips.
No.
This is not on my work. No. My workplace's dime. So, thank you guys. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the tips. We appreciate it. And become a member. We're going to be open on Monday night, though. It's not going to be members only on Monday night.
Yes. Monday night is going to be about what happened in court that day. We'll do our members only a different night. We'll let you know when that's going to be.
Absolutely. All right. Love y'all. Thanks so much for being here. And we will see you tomorrow morning. Bye.
Have fun.
Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, allegedly. I'm smart.
Happy Monday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie. Happy gay summer, Mel.
Happy hump day, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm not humping anybody. I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Happy Saturday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
Oh, no.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and my mic is muted.
Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and that's Briscoe.
And welcome to Something's Off, a true crime podcast where we swat the haters aside with our astute takes and humor and joy.
Oh, the joylessness of those people. Hags.
You hear it first in the break in the story. One little crack and the whole thing gets wary. A witness swears, but the timeline bends.
smile too smooth and the trail just ends. Mel Barrett says, hold up, look again. Rebecca Lavoy follows every thread. If it feels too neat, then it's not the truth. There's a shadow line running through the room. Something's off, something's off. You can feel it in the bones. Something's off, something's off. When the facts won't come home. Something's off, something's off.
This is literally because it's 100. It's been happening for the past like day.
Oh dear God! Everywhere is a hotspot when Dr. Wolf is on the TV. Am I right? Everywhere is a hotspot when Dr. Wolf is on the TV. I'm sorry. This is very funny.
What are you laughing about?
Because you're just sitting there waiting for the video to start.
I was listening this whole time. You
listening to what? You're not playing anything, and now you're frozen. God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Let me text Mel. Let me call Mel. I'm going to call Mel.
No, I'm not answering your call. I'm not doing it. Why is it? Oh, Jesus.
Maybe go back on the Wi-Fi.
I am back on the Wi-Fi. Can you hear me now? Can we do the show now? Should we do the show now? Rebecca? Rebecca, can you hear me?
Can you hear me now? Hello, internet! Hello!
Hello? Hello, worldwide interwebs. Can you hear me? Let's do this. I have to look at my phone over here.
We're gonna go members only.
We're the ones who chase. Yeah, we're the ones who chase.
Wait, did that witness just blink three times?
Something's off.